And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins the show today, and we have some pressing issues to discuss. We break down the WikiLeaks scandal. Wake Forest's radio announcer has been providing impermissible information to Wake Forest opponents at different times over the last 3 years. Dennis Dodd and I will react to it, break down the story as best we can, plus grading coaching hires and a look ahead to some of the biggest bowl games of the first weekend of bowl season. Make sure that you're subscribed to the SEC on CBS podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher so that you can get all the bowl picks. They're coming up in just a couple days from Tom Fornelli and Robbie Calland. Enjoy this Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, Dennis Dodd joins the show. It's a Doddcast edition. We've got bowl games coming up, Dennis, and I will pitch a couple of bowls your way so that we could look at the first weekend here in a little bit. But first, we have pressing, controversial college football bizarro world headlines as the WikiLeaks scandal. We are recording this right now, Wednesday, right around 4 o'clock Eastern time. And Dennis, just to catch the audience up before we dive into this, Tommy Elrod, former Wake Forest quarterback, turned 11-year Wake Forest staffer, longtime member of Jim Grobe's staff at Wake Forest. He was the quarterback's coach and passing game coordinator at the peak of his coaching career. Was not retained by Dave Clawson in 2014. He takes a job full-time with a local investment firm in Winston-Salem, part-time on the IMG radio broadcast. And after an investigation following the Louisville loss, which you may remember Dave Clawson came out and said they were ready for something, we have discovered something. Apparently someone on the Louisville staff left some evidence after they left the area that showed that they were prepared for some of the Demon Deacons play in an impermissible way. An investigation, a thorough investigation, has followed, and it turns out that Tommy Elrod from the radio broadcast has been providing impermissible information to Wake Forest opponents for the past 3 seasons, the entirety of the Dave Clawson era. So, Dennis, your initial reaction when you first saw the WikiLeaks headline was?
Clearly, Dave Clawson needs a contract extension.
Right?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That was not my first thought. I think we talked about this. I don't think this lends itself to some profound hot take. The way I look at it right now is it's some whack job with revenge on his mind, a real whack job. You've got to go to these lengths to try to get back at a guy who didn't retain you on the staff, which is what Elrod apparently did. I don't think it's a symptom or a sign of some big broad conspiracy or everybody's doing it. You had a good point. You know, if everybody or a lot of teams cheat on the recruiting trail or pay players, well, we don't hear that every day. Everybody kind of keeps their mouth shut. You know, why should it be any different in this case, if a lot of teams profited?
There's a statement out from Louisville athletic director Tom Jurich, which did admit that some of the dots that were being connected by those of us on the outside, the fact that Lonnie Galloway, currently on Bobby Petrino's staff, was on the Wake Forest staff with Tommy Elrod, and that is one of the teams, and that was one of the games, as Dave Clawson guessed, where Louisville was provided some information before the game, which could have benefited them, though Tom Jurich claimed, but it didn't help us. I don't think that this was the best look necessarily, but there is a little bit of there is a call right now from the outside, particularly from the media, for the ACC to step in. Do you think that the ACC will have its hand forced to issue some kind of punishment? And if so, how do you dole that out and where does it go?
Well, it becomes like Watergate. What did they know and when did they know it? You know, how many schools got this advantage and what did they do with it and why didn't they report it? I mean, are we to assume that every school that Wake played has got a call from this guy or got information from this guy? I mean, that's the first questions that need to be answered. And then from the always forthcoming ACC, I suspect it'll not be swept under the rug, but we'll never know the full scope of this. in reference to Tom Church's statement. If I'm reading this right, Chip, he just told us that, yeah, we got some information, but we didn't see any of the plays that we knew were coming that they gave us. So it really didn't give us an advantage, so there's nothing to see here. I think that's what he just said.
You know, there's another side to this. My understanding is that there was one play that it was pointed out to me that Louisville was perfectly prepared for, and Wake saw that they were perfectly prepared for it and started to sense that maybe something was up. My initial take was, yeah, but you ran a play right at Devontae Fields. The fact that it didn't work might have had a lot to do with the fact that Devontae Fields is a future NFL edge rusher.
That could have something to do with it, yes.
So yeah. I am worried that we will waste time trying to pick apart a lot of the layers to this, when my honest reaction is it seems like it's a very personal grudge-related violation, more so than something that was a grand yes. conspiracy, like you said, just because, man, I don't know. I mean, I have not been in this position for very long, but what from the conversations that I've had, both on the record and off, I just don't see a lot of schools, and I especially don't see a lot of coaches telling on each other. And I've never thought to know that a coach would not accept any extra information that they could get, whether it was within the letter of the law or not. And in that sense, I'm having trouble finding this outrage as though a great injustice to the integrity of college football has been done here.
Well, the outrage, if that's the word, I don't know if it is, or what the ACC needs to plumb down on is who took those calls or communications, and why when any of this was laid out for any of these coaching staffs, did they not report it? And I don't know how you prove that. You know, I don't know if the ACC has access to emails. It could be just phone calls. You know, it's going to be on these schools' honor to really tell on themselves. You know what I'm saying?
And no one does that.
And no one does that. So it's apparently at its surface, it looks like a lot of coaching staffs or persons at those coaching staffs took those calls and didn't report them at the very least, and at the most gained a competitive advantage.
Yeah. And for those of you who want to suggest the Las Vegas or betting or odds or gambling related angle, Wake Forest, strangely consistent against the spread. There has only been four instances in the 3 years of the Dave Clawson era where the result of the game was more than 10 points off from the projected spread set by the odds makers. And the fact that the Demon Deacons, you know, fell with, you know, six against the spread wins and six against the spread losses, you know, that's basically what every odds maker wants to see. You know, the books want to see every team
against
the spread.
Yeah.
So I've even struggled to find an angle there. Fascinating and bizarre are the words that come to mind. And not to mention in today's current political climate, I mean, it's WakeLeaks. This is the greatest name
it
ever.
WakeLeaks. Whoever coined that gets a tip of the cap. That's a good one. And in any story written about this, you have to make mention that you were gaining a competitive advantage over Wake.
Wake Forest.
You know, it's like if they're doing this with Wake, what is Alabama doing, or what are people doing against Alabama? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's,
yeah, we'll take Wake's playbook, you know, we're 40 point favorites. We'll take their playbook.
You know, and the fact that Tommy Elrod was a coach in the ACC for 11 years means that he has relationships with college football coaches, and these guys talk to each other, and man, this is messy. This is nasty. This will never, ever, ever be forgotten. But it's, I'm just finding more humor than anything, and that's unfortunate, I suppose. Maybe I'm jaded. Maybe it's just the silly season has gotten a hold of me.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on all that. This is something for June. Not December, 14th, but it is what it is.
All right. Well, speaking of the silly season and speaking of coaches, later this week, you will be ranking the coaching hires. So we don't need to tease. I don't want to reveal all the secrets of your coaching hires the way that Tommy Elrod's been revealing all of Wake Forest game plans to Wake Forest opponents.
I'm going to go Elrod on you.
Just a couple ones that come to mind here, and ones that I've mentioned on College Football Rundown on CBS Sports live at 5 p.m. every weekday. I've got to think that the Charlie Strong hire at South Florida is going to be up there.
It is. I like Charlie Strong. I like Lane Kiffin. There's really no downside for FAU in hiring him. I like Tom Herman. I like Charlie Strong, as I mentioned. I like Willie Taggart at Oregon. I thought he'd be good from the beginning. I thought that was a fit. There really aren't this list. There really aren't any Fs. I mean, you can't do that to anybody. They're just trying to do the best they can. But yeah, I think I'm really high on Mike Sanford at Western Kentucky, who I think is getting out of Notre Dame at the right time before it really hits the you-know-what. After a 4-8 season, his reputation in the industry is impeccable. And Western Kentucky's recent history of producing Power 5-worthy coaches is getting better, too. So I'm really high on him.
Willie Taggart. Bobby Petrino in his rehab state, and now most recently Jeff Brohm off to Purdue. Yeah. I mean, you got to think that if you're an offensive coach, and he certainly is, coming off of molding DeShone Kizer, coming off of a year with Jay Ajayi at Boise State, coming off of a lot of years at Stanford where he was the coach of guys like Stephen Taylor and Ty Montgomery, I too am a big Mike Sanford fan. Glad you mentioned that. What the heck is going to happen at Notre Dame, where Brian Kelly already had a very tenuous relationship with either his team or the fans or the media or all the above, fired Brian Van Gorder in the middle of the season, loses Mike Sanford now. So this is a team that will also be losing DeShone Kizer and a lot of other key players. Is it a situation where you think that Brian Kelly, a coach who, very high marks prior to Notre Dame, did a great job at Grand Valley State forever. Obviously, the Cincinnati leading them to probably one of the greatest, 3-year runs that Cincinnati football might ever see. Where's Brian Kelly's trajectory go? Do you think that he is someone who will be ready to double down and rebuild at South Bend? Or is that a coach, now that we have every single, again, as we're recording this podcast, every single FBS job has been filled? Is Brian Kelly, is that a piece that moves before the start of 2017? Or is this going to be just like the hottest seat in America come next August?
Well, there's nowhere he can go, even if there were open jobs. When you're the coach at Notre Dame, where do you go? There's no place up after Notre Dame. I suppose Texas or USC or something like that. But he's 4-8. So after you've got the Notre Dame job, there are about 5 jobs that maybe are better or perceived to be better. I think he's going to end up in the NFL in some capacity. Now, I don't think it'll be this year, which leads me to believe that he has to go like 8-5 next year, 8-4, to enhance his resume for the NFL. Because 8-4 isn't going to get him out of Notre Dame to any of those schools I mentioned. Number one, his record won't be good enough. Number two, they're all filled with guys that are going to be there for years. Talking about Michigan, Ohio State, USC, Texas. So he's kind of in a spot where his career, frankly, is at a crossroads. He's trapped, if that's the word, at Notre Dame. And what if he has another 4-8 season? Where does he end up as an offensive coordinator in the NFL? Because I just don't think there's anywhere else he can go in college.
Unless
he wants to really swallow his pride. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, do you think that if an NFL franchise right now, the Los Angeles Rams, the only open job right now, if another NFL franchise, do you think that Brian Kelly could rise on their radar for this particular offseason?
After Look, it'd be different if he had gone to the championship game 2 years ago or last year. But now we're going, next year will be 5 years since he went to that championship game. And I don't know if the Rams know what they want. You know, Jeff Fisher hung on way too long there. I can't even pretend to know what they're looking at. The NFL is typically a retread league. Very few guys, and particularly fewer from college, get chances like that. Chip Kelly didn't. He doesn't seem like he's going to be long for the NFL world very much longer. So, yeah, if I knew, I would say yes, I guess. But I don't know what the Rams are thinking. You know, and does look, that's L.A. You need a rock star coach, somebody to turn on the masses, somebody to dominate the news cycle. I don't know if Brian Kelly does that. You know, USC just kicked the poo-poo out of Notre Dame there. That's his last enduring image right now in Southern California.
Such a fascinating spot. And unfortunately, and I don't mean this in a soulless way, not just for the future of Brian Kelly, a coach who certainly was considered one of the hottest names in the industry at one time, but also, you know, that would be the Notre Dame job, you know, something that could trigger a chain reaction that would then set this whole coaching carousel in motion, because right now we are at a stasis. Peter King, in his Monday morning quarterback, addressed the Los Angeles Rams job not only by weighing in on the usual names for that would cycle in from the NFL, but also looking at college. Interesting quote from David Shaw, who I do think could be a great NFL coach one day. David Shaw, who spent, I think, like 8 years already as an NFL assistant, you know, kind of giving it, from the best I can tell, the thanks, maybe one day, but not now message to a lot of NFL franchises. But three very interesting names that Peter King brought up. Dan Mullen from Mississippi State, coming off a 5-7 season, but certainly trying to hitch himself to Dak Prescott in any way he can, I'd imagine. And then also Paul Christ from Wisconsin, which I kind of figured he'd be at Wisconsin forever, because that's his thing. He's Mr. Madison. He's Mr. Former Quarterback. He's offensive coordinator. And now he's gotten them to the Big Ten championship game. And then the third name mentioned by Peter King, which is really, really interesting, it's Colorado's Mike McIntyre, not only for what he's done at San Jose State and Colorado, but because of some ties to a Bill Parcells Dallas Cowboys coaching staff. Do you see, or do those names line up with what you see in terms of the coaching industry as some of the next names up? Because Jim Harbaugh already said that he's not going to take the Rams job, and those are just lies created by their enemies.
Dan Mullen doesn't strike me as an NFL coach. I'm sorry. He's thin-skinned enough in Starkville, Mississippi, and he just is. I think he would admit to that. He rides his staff hard and it's been successful mostly as a coach. And I just find it ironic that the fact that he couldn't sustain success without Dak Prescott and go 5-7 is a reason that his stock has gone up. That's part of it. The other part is, you know, Dak Prescott's going to become the MVP or rookie of the year. And that does legitimately help his resume, but he's not going to be coaching Dak Prescott in the NFL if he gets there. So, yeah, and what was, I'm sorry, the other college coach you mentioned?
Mike McIntyre.
Oh, Mike McIntyre. Yeah, I think he does have some NFL ties. He's got that look about him. I could see him doing that. But and look, any guy who's won 11 at San Jose State and 10 at Colorado is pretty special, you know, and still young enough to be on the rise. So, yeah, I guess I could see that. But, again, it's after Chip – I think Chip Kelly kind of hurts it for every college coach, because here was the absolute pinnacle. The rock star, innovative guy. You know, if he can't get it done, which now seems to be a trend with his career in the NFL, who can?
I've got a hard time, and maybe I'm just going too human on this, and the NFL is certainly anything but human, but – if Mike McIntyre had won, I think, two conference games heading into this season, you know, maybe three, and now he's got this, you know, he's got this moment with Colorado, and yeah, he's going to lose, I think, 11 starters at least from both sides of the ball. But if Colorado stuck with him, doesn't Mike McIntyre like kind of owe it to stick with Colorado?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if the NFL indeed does come calling, I don't think anybody at Colorado could say anything. I mean, he was on the hot seat to begin the season, and they stuck it out with him, and he's in a fourth season, and is, you know, looks like he's going to do great things, and did do great things. But no, if the NFL came calling, he wouldn't have to apologize for anything at Colorado. I mean, they kicking and screaming built him a new facility, which they've needed for years, and now he's able to activate that a little bit. But no, we'll see.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, so this weekend we have five bowl games on Saturday, Dennis.
Yes.
Five. We got Texas, San Antonio, and New Mexico, Houston and San Diego State, Arkansas State, UCF, Appalachian State, and Toledo, and then in the Nolens Bowl, Southern Miss, Louisiana Lafayette. Next week starts with some fun with Boca Raton, Memphis, and Western Kentucky. Put on your seatbelts and get ready for touchdowns there. But I want to ask you first about the Houston Cougars, who have promoted Major Applewhite to the head coaching position. Help me here. Todd Orlando was going to be the interim coach.
Yeah.
Now the defensive coordinator. So I guess this is technically a demotion, since Major Applewhite will serve as the head coach for the game. Do you think that Todd Orlando is going to end up on the Houston staff as defensive coordinator?
No, he's got a standing offer from what I understand, at Texas. So I think that's going to happen. I can't explain why Todd Orlando was interim and Major Applewhite got the job. I can't explain that. It may be just something they didn't think through. But no, I think the hire is good. I think Houston came at this from a good place, because they always knew that there's a risk that Tom Herman would leave. They had two good coordinators in their back pocket. You know, you interview the guys you want to interview. From what I'm told, Lane Kiffin didn't interview well. For some reason, they didn't hire Les Miles. I tweeted that they offered and Larry Fedora turned down the job. You know, and why would he take it, frankly, when you're at North Carolina? And that's a Power Five, but he is, you know, he has Texas ties, so there's no downside to doing that. But they always had these guys who they had full confidence in, and I part of me thought it was going to be Major Applewhite all along. I've been in that room. I've seen him interact with players. He is clearly Tom Herman's number two. He was his lieutenant, and I think there'll be a lot of continuity there. I think he's, you know, I assume he'll be calling the plays. I think he'll do very well.
So we've got the American Athletic Conference, which really has become a fascinating league. Navy, of course, will still be Navy. Tulsa locks up Philip Montgomery to a new contract. Houston promotes Major Applewhite. We've got Mike Norvell at Memphis, who has got a good finish to the season, including beating Houston. Charlie Strong at South Florida. Jeff Collins at Temple. There's, you know, Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. You know, where do you see this conference turning? Is this a situation where you think that Charlie Strong and Major Applewhite, inheriting two of the most successful programs from this past season, are probably your front runners to end up competing for the conference title next year?
In the AAC?
Yes.
I think Houston's going to keep going. I think South Florida is going to keep going. Yes. I mean, I would think that would be a logical conclusion. Navy's going to drop off because of the losses and the injuries they had, but never count them out. It's amazing what they did in year one in a conference. Yeah, I think UCF's loaded. I don't think Florida is, but I'm sorry, Houston is. But UCF will be maybe the prohibitive favorite going in. When you've got Quentin Flowers, and I think the SID told me 18 starters back. I talked to him this week. Then that's a good place to start. He's walking into a loaded situation.
And it's Charlie Strong, a very good football coach.
Yeah, no, he's in his happy hunting ground in Florida. He knows the talent. He's got the contacts. He'll get the players there. And I'm told, you know, their facilities are great. I mean, what's not to like about living on the, you know, right there in Tampa on the ocean in that climate? With, I think they built a, they play in a pro stadium. I think they've got a real nice football facility. I think they're doing some great things. I think he's just going to keep going there.
Well, we can we will enjoy that that wonderful Tampa environment here in about less than a month.
Absolutely.
In the for the national championship game.
Yep, can't wait.
All right, he is Dennis Dodd. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at DennisDoddCBS. Dennis, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for checking in from the road.
All right, more WikiLeaks. We need them all. We need them.